Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 20. Hello everyone and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, the penultimate episode of Season 20. That's right, it's Episode 9 already. And although it's hard not to make this sound biased, I have genuinely, on a personal level, enjoyed this season more than any other. We've implemented a lot of changes in how we do things, specifically in the back-of-house operations, so how we monitor your emails, how we use those emails, and how they're suggested by our small team for me to read out. So as our Patreons already know, I no longer proofread the emails, don't worry, somebody else does, but it means when I read them out on Dark Bites, unlike the Dark Paranormal episodes, which I need to have a good knowledge of prior to reading to try and give my best for you in terms of performance vocally. However, when it comes to Dark Bites, what we've done now is one of our team will proofread those emails, set up the episode basically, and I will read it for the first time on the recording. So any emotions or any reactions that I show on Dark Bites are 100% sincere. And it's genuinely given me a new love for reading paranormal tales, having those read out for the first time and hearing them for the first time. But what's really reignited my passion for the paranormal is you guys, because this season, in reality, should have been a total flop. And the reason for that being car crashes, illnesses, ongoing fights with broadband providers or alleged providers, and things such as that. So it should have been a nightmare, but you guys have sincerely kept me enthused about doing this show, and long may that continue. So genuinely, thank you. You guys have made this show get to season 20, and I cannot wait to deliver you season 21. And speaking of which, of course, after next week's finale, which I'm hoping will be one of the best things we've done so far, we of course take our post-season break, which means we will be back for the debut of season 21 on Friday, the 8th of August. Now, obviously, as we are keeping open the Patreon free week trial, which is at the highest tier, and will allow you to get access to the entire back catalogue of Dark Bites, if you've been meaning to do so, it might be a good idea to do it between now and a week today, because after that point, at midnight on the Friday, it will end, and possibly won't return until at least season 30, who knows if it will even then, it may be a one-time thing, I'm not sure, we all know how this show likes to evolve. Speaking of which, we have a splendid season 21 already lined up for you. But if you do think you have a paranormal experience that may fit the Dark Paranormal, this show is exceptionally fluid. We will move episodes in, out, wherever they need to be that I think would suit the listener. So it's common practice for me to even pull finales. If something arrives at the right time, which I think better terrifies both me and I believe you. So if you are sat on such an experience, feel free to send that in for season 21. You can either do so by clicking the link in the show notes or going direct to the website thedarkparanormal.com and clicking Submit My Experience. Now, of course, before I read you today's experience, which I think is fantastic and one of the best we've had yet, I do need to thank our wonderful paying Patreons over at Patreon. Now, if you decide to stay on after that trial week, you will become a paying Patreon. And if you think I haven't heard my name yet, don't worry at all. Once the trial is out the way, we will work our way through everyone who stayed on's names to welcome them to our wonderful community who literally give this place a feeling of soul, if you will. There's a sense of community, a sense of support, and most importantly, no egos. And it's a wonderful place to be to share your experiences as well as listen to Dark Bites and the early ad-free releases of everything on the main feed. It's been great to see some of the free trial people interacting with people who've been on Patreon for a while, and their comments are along the lines of, I didn't expect to receive this much support, etc. And I've said this from the start regarding Patreon, If I was going to join a community, it would be this one. And that's not hyperbole, that's the genuine truth. There are good souls in this group, and believe me, anyone bad will be turfed. We just want a good place to be, and to be safe, to be heard, and to be able to not be judged. And believe me, I wish I could take the plaudits for this community, but it was created by the Patreons themselves, showing who they are, their supportive attitude, etc., and making it a genuinely, truly amazing place from my perspective. So if you're interested on becoming one of the team, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Just like the following wonderful new team members have. Lara Luna, Roylene Ripley, Caitlin, Maddie Rylance, Diamond Zelina, Tori P, April Creamer, Rob Z, Oliver CR, Jenny1126, Ricardo Verdin, Miss H, Shelby Montgomery, Ellie Davis, Kawa Kamen, Dark Mike, Joe Michaels, It's Go Time, We Not I, and Good Choice 1111. Thank you so much, guys. Your support allows the show to both stay and grow. If you like the sound of what you've heard so far, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, it's time for the penultimate time this season to lower those lights. Make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door as we hear why the priest was wrong. Hi there. I wish to remain anonymous, but you can call me Lucia. That was the name I chose for the sacrament of confirmation. As with other people's experiences, I too have changed people's names, locations, dates of certain events, and other things I've deemed a bit too obvious. However, certain detail, such as the family I will go on to mention, did go on vacation to the place mentioned. All this said, I promise my story is absolutely truthful. I should also say, English is my second language. So I apologize if anything needs correcting or you choose to make any amendments. That's perfectly understandable. I've been listening to your podcast for months now, both to sharpen my English and as the paranormal is something that enmeshed its world with mine. After listening to so many of your other listeners' experiences, finally I'm compelled to send you my own. I'm French, and although I've traveled, my home has always been France and still is. The house in this experience that I owned, or should I say inherited, is what I would imagine a lot of people would call a dream home. 6 bedrooms, original stonework, and a nice amount of acreage within the Burgundy countryside. What they don't know is the history buried beneath those beautiful gardens. Or why they, or should I say it, made me sell the home, despite our family's historic ties. My family has owned that land for numerous generations. Though the current house is relatively new, even though it's still over a century old. The home stands where there once was a chateau, Chateau de Montclair. The chateau's name's obviously been changed, but it was a magnificent estate that housed the wealthy Beaumont family and their staff of over 50. That was until the 15th of November, 1897. The Beaumonts were in Paris when it happened, and the staff had organized a celebration. Some accounts say it was a wedding between 2 staff members. Others claim it was something they would do whenever the family were away, have a big party. But what everyone does agree on is that there was a fire started in the servants' quarters, just after midnight, and it spread with unnatural speed. The servants' quarters were directly under the main dining room where that party was. 49 of the 50 people died that night, trapped in the main dining hall as flames consumed the exits. Only one man survived, Henri Dupont, the head groundkeeper. Official records state that Dupont escaped through a window and tried desperately in vain to save others, but was allegedly fought back by the heat. However, local folklore tells a very different and darker account. Legend states that Mr. Dupont, prior to the event, strategically poured paraffin in the vents between the up and down rooms and around the circumference of the dining hall. He encircled the hall in flowers from the garden to appear to dress the room, but really to cover the smell of the paraffin. At some point, as the wine flowed, DuPont locked the dining hall doors from the outside, threw a burning rag into the servants' quarters, a place throughout the evening he'd revisited to add more and more paraffin. Given the lack of any real fire service and the distance from relative community, meant the fire could just burn itself out. When the Beaumont family returned, it turns out they had no insurance. They, for them, were financially ruined, even though they had enough money to demolish what remained of the chateau and build a smaller home in its place. And it's this home, which, through a debt repayment, came into the ownership of my family. And as I'll go on to explain, it was me who eventually inherited this property from my grandmother. Growing up in that house, Mr. DuPont wasn't just local legend. He was an in-house family disciplinary tool. Misbehave at dinner? Mr. DuPont doesn't like when children waste food. Refuse to go to bed? Perhaps we should call Mr. DuPont and tell him you need to tuck yourself in. By age 5, I could picture him vividly. Tall, gaunt, with worker's hands and eyes that showed the gleeful knowledge of what fire could do to human flesh. It's strange how a child's imagination can make these fictional threats feel like intimate knowledge of a real person. The first time I heard the knocks, I was 7 years old. 6 deliberate raps on my bedroom door just after midnight. I remember the time because I had one of those red-numbered alarm clocks, and the red seemed to be brighter in the darkness. My parents were heavy sleepers. Our old house creaked constantly. So I convinced myself it was either just the settling wood, or maybe one of my parents, fully aware I was still awake at that hour, simply trying to scare me back to sleep. But something about that pattern felt intentional. Purposeful. By that I mean, with hindsight, it wasn't a pattern someone would do to scare a child. Apologies if that makes no sense. More curious than scared, I slowly opened my door and the hallway spread out in both directions, completely empty. The next morning at breakfast, I said to my mother, "Did you knock on my door last night?" As she walked, she just spoke, "And why would I knock? If I needed you, I'd just come in." She was making coffee. She didn't even flinch. "Bad dreams," my father shouted, hearing the conversation from the hallway. "I guess so," I replied. Their reactions were too realistic for me to think it was them. I didn't mention those knocks for years, but they would still come periodically. Always the same pattern. Always just after midnight. And always when I was alone in that room. However, one morning, I walked into the kitchen mid-conversation as my younger brother, Marcus, who had just turned 7, said in almost anger to my father, "You did!" Then proceeded to knock on the table. It was the same knock, the same pattern. I didn't know what to say, so I literally said nothing. I just ate my breakfast and made my way to school. One night, I heard the knocks again, but this time more distant. Marcus's door. I heard him open his door, and I just placed 2 pillows over my head. I didn't really sleep, and I was the first to wake the next day. I headed down to make myself some breakfast and noticed our cellar door was open. I froze. I could hear deep breathing coming from that dark room. As it was light outside, I felt brave enough to at least peek in. so I stood in the doorframe and looked down, where I found Marcus asleep, curled up on the stone floor near where the original chateau's foundation still showed through to our basement wall. When I woke him, Marcus had no memory of going downstairs. Our parents said he was sleepwalking. The manifestations escalated as we both hit adolescence. Marcus was a very sensitive young boy, and it was no surprise, looking back, that he began talking to empty corners. Not the imaginary friend conversations of early childhoods everywhere. These were responses to something that seemed to be speaking to him. I could see our parents were growing concerned when they realized he was having full conversations, complete with pauses for replies, that they couldn't hear. He says the dining hall was beautiful, Marcus just spouted out one evening when he was 13. Brass chandeliers, mahogany tables, they could seat 20 people on each. He misses how it looked before. I felt something cold inside my stomach. Who says that? Mr. Dupont. He smiled. He's been telling me about the chateau, about how grand it was. Marcus spoke with casual familiarity, like talking with a neighbour. He's not angry about the fire, you know. Oh, okay, I managed to squeak out. Marcus started walking away, then stopped, turned, smiled, and said, he's actually quite proud of it. And then triumphantly turned and walked away. That night, I heard the six knocks on Marcus's door again. But when I crept into the hallway to check on him, I found his door standing wide open and his bed empty. The door to my parents' room was slightly ajar, so I popped my head in, and there was Marcus, standing perfectly still at the foot of their bed, just watching them sleep. He seemed to be in some sort of trance as he didn't even react to me entering the room. I touched his shoulder, and he startled awake, making an in-breath that nearly woke my parents up. As I quietly escorted him out to the landing, I whispered to him in a rather angry tone, what the hell are you doing? But he looked terrified. He says he doesn't recall leaving his bed, and things would only escalate from here.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
The sleepwalking incidents multiplied. We'd find Marcus in different parts of the house. The kitchen, turning all the gas burners on and off. The living room, with every piece of furniture pushed against the walls. The garden shed, holding rusty tools we'd never seen before. Every time, he'd wake confused, exhausted, sometimes with dirt under his fingernails. Scratches he couldn't explain. Our parents took him to the doctors. He had sleep studies, neurological tests, even a child psychologist, who suggested maybe trauma or stress. But how do you explain that the trauma predates the child by over a century? The breaking point came during Marcus's 14th birthday party. We'd invited his entire class, and our mother had decorated the dining room with streamers and balloons. Halfway through the celebration, in the middle of singing Happy Birthday, I noticed Marcus's face drop, and he stared at the candles and at the cake as if in a trance. The song ended with a round of applause, but Marcus didn't react. Everyone fell into an awkward silence. My mother smiled and walked over to him just as he stood and announced, "Mr. Dupont says this is disrespectful to the dead." The room fell silent. 20 teenagers staring at my brother, who to them had gone insane, and to us had just turned completely pale and seemed rather unsteady. "Disrespectful," Marcus shouted, pointing around the room with each syllable, swaying on his feet. "He says parties." And then he fainted. There was a good hour recess where the party made its way outside, whilst inside, mother and father and myself managed to revive Marcus. He was white, shaking, gulping down the third glass of water he'd been passed. "What happened?" He looked at us all. My mother said, "You fainted with all the excitement, darling," with a fake smile. Father joined in as well. "Everyone else is outside if you want to go and join them." "Okay," said Marcus. And as he stood up, leaning heavily on the table, he stared at the cake, noticing the candles were burnt and blown out. He said, "Did I faint blowing out the candles?" My mother jumped on this and said, "No, just before we got to it, actually. Here, I'll light them again for you." Can I do it?" asked Marcus. And again my father, sensing some normality return, said, "Well, it is your birthday." Marcus stood, took the lighter from my mother, turned and ran towards the curtains, flicking the lighter as he went. I managed to tackle him before he reached the curtains, but not before my parents and at least 10 other children had re-entered the room to witness my brother trying to set fire to our house. He didn't seem to put up much of a fight once he hit the floor and I snatched the lighter from his hands. He stayed on the floor in a prone position and then arched his head, looking up as if someone was stood directly at the top of his head. Marcus formed that dreamy, distant expression of someone following orders they couldn't refuse. That was the night our parents finally took our stories about Mr. Dupont seriously. We moved the following month to Lyon, staying with our aunt for a whilst our parents decided what to do with that house. For 2 years, we lived in a cramped apartment, and Marcus returned to normal. No more sleepwalking, no more conversations with thin air. He even stopped remembering most of what happened, as if the distance from the house had broken whatever connection there was between it and him. My parents happily signed the house over to my grandparents, both of whom never claimed to have anything other than happy memories there. My parents were well off enough to buy another property, so bought a 2-bedroom house in a little region in Lyon. Marcus still lived with them and had a steady girlfriend and a part-time job. And after a year or so, life became, well, life again. But genuinely, something in me just knew. Like a stone on my shoulder, a feeling I could never shake, that I'd encounter Mr. Dupont once again. When I turned 23, a week later, my grandfather passed away, and we returned to that home for the funeral. And although I was extremely anxious the entire time, nothing happened, thankfully. However, just 2 months later, my poor grandmother passed away with a heart attack. She'd left me the house in her will. Just me, outright. No split, no mention of my parents, nor Marcus, just me. I knew I was her favourite grandchild, but this was embarrassing. Even though I demanded we sell and split the cash, my parents told me it would be bad luck to go against Grandma's wishes, and they outright refused. Some dark stars aligned, and as I was still deciding what to do, I lost my job. My parents, as I stated, was a two-bedroom home. Both bedrooms were full. And being 23, I had no intention of sleeping on their couch until the house sold. So, I decided to move back until the sale was made. I had enough savings to see me through 2 months, 3 max. My parents begged me not to move back, but by now I told myself I was an adult and I was practical, and I wouldn't let the thought of something foolish like a ghost stop me from going back and saving my cash. Plus, I expected a very quick sale as the house is beautiful. Also, it was a hell of a lot of money. And a hell of a lot of money to come directly to me. So spending a few weeks there felt like the least I could do. I even found myself saying, how dangerous can an empty house be? And so I moved back in on a crisp October morning. And for the first 3 weeks, even the stone on my shoulder seemed to have disappeared and everything seemed absolutely fine. I'd convinced myself that childhood fears and teenage drama had blown rural folklore out of proportion. The house felt peaceful, quiet, safe. A girlfriend that I'd met travelling in Switzerland, Claire, came to visit me at the home. She was a skeptic by nature, the kind of person who'd debunk ghost stories with scientific explanations, rational thought. So, whilst drinking, I stupidly mentioned the family history. She laughed. You French and your dramatic ghost stories, she laughed. Next you'll be telling me the house is cursed. That night, for the first time in God knows how many years, myself and Claire were sharing a bed, and she sat upright. Did you hear that? I had, but I just stared at her. It was someone knocking on the door, 6 times. She was already getting up to check. It was a very strange pattern, too. She opened the door, and of course, the hallway was empty. But as Claire stood in the doorway, looking both directions, she turned back to me, and I saw her expression change. Her face muscles went slack, and when she looked directly at me, her eyes had that same distant quality that I'd seen from Marcus so many times. My blood turned to ice. Immediately, I was back to the terrified girl snatching a lighter from his hands. Claire, I got out of bed slowly. Are you okay? She blinked, and the dreamy expression thankfully vanished. Nothing. Yes, I'm fine. I think I'm just more tired than I thought. Did someone knock, or did I dream that? Well, I lied. I said she was dreaming. But I spent the rest of that night sitting in a chair by our bedroom door. I told her I couldn't sleep, so I was going to read for a while. Really, I just stared through that book. I was listening out for footsteps, for knocks. Thankfully, they never came. But watching Claire sleep, I had a terrible certainty that Mr. Dupont had found me once again. Claire was supposed to visit for the week. However, a day later, she left, claiming a work emergency. But I could see that wasn't the truth. Something in her eyes let me know so. Something about that house unsettled her on a level she simply couldn't articulate. The morning she left, I found her standing in the dining room. Last night I had the strangest dream, she said, without looking at me. There was a man, saying he wanted to show me something important. He was very insistent that I understand how beautiful this place was. I didn't tell her about Marcus. I should have. But I just shrugged, hoping all of this would just stop. After Claire left, the house changed. What had been subtle before became unmistakable. I'd find cabinet doors open in the morning, despite clearly remembering closing them. The gas stove would be turned on and lit, hissing softly in the pre-dawn darkness. The dining room chairs would be pulled out as if accommodating invisible dinner guests. The six knocks became more frequent now, sometimes even during the daylight hours. Always the same pattern. I even kept a journal, documenting every time they occurred, trying to find some logic in the chaos. October 15th, 2:30 a.m., knocks on bedroom door. 18th, 7:45 p.m., knocks on the kitchen door whilst cooking. October the 22nd, 11:15 a.m., bathroom door knocking whilst showering. October the 23rd, 2 a.m., knocks on the bedroom door. The pattern was clear. He was mapping the house, learning where I spent my time. I was at my wit's end, and after one night of no sleep, I went to the local parish priest. Being Catholic, I hoped he would understand. And he did. Father Bernard had apparently heard stories from parishioners about our home. He agreed to come and bless the house. But then he stopped and warned me that some presences don't respond well to formal religious intervention. If this entity, which I doubt is this Mr. Dupont, feels ownership over the property, he explained, blessing it may be seen as an act of war rather than peace. Father Bernard performed the blessing on a grey November afternoon. He moved through each room methodically, sprinkling holy water, reciting prayers in Latin. When we reached the dining room, the activity escalated. Cabinet doors began opening and slamming shut in rapid succession. In the kitchen, the gas stove turned on and off repeatedly, clicking like an angry insect. And throughout it all, I could now and again hear something that might have been laughter. Low, masculine, deeply satisfied laughter. "He's enjoying this," Father Bernard observed grimly. The climax came when we reached the basement, where the original chateau foundations were still visible. As he prayed and sprinkled holy water along those ancient stone lines, the whole house began to shake. Not earthquake tremors, deliberate, rhythmic impacts. As if something huge, like a giant, was throwing itself against the walls of the home. Then, suddenly, silence. The house instantaneously felt empty for the first time since I'd moved back in. An oppressive weight I hadn't noticed before, that eventually became ever-present, was gone. The air seemed lighter. It was easier to even breathe. "It's done," the priest said. But Father Bernard looked exhausted. "Whatever was here has now been removed. You should have peace now." He was wrong. For 3 weeks, the house remained quiet. I began to hope that maybe, finally, this nightmare was over. I even called Claire to see if she'd like to pop back for a few days again. She declined, stating she was buried deep with work. I heard through another friend, however, that was not the case. I'd literally just placed the phone back from ringing Claire, and the phone rang. And I was informed that somebody had made an offer, €30,000 over the asking price, if I would take it off the market now, and would move out within a week. Well, I accepted immediately. I called my mother and said, "I've sold the house. I'm going to come and stay with you from tomorrow, if that's okay. The people who've bought it want to move in this very week." My mother was overjoyed, as was I. Little did she know what I'd been through over the last month. I packed my bags, and a tinge of sadness came over me. So I had a little walk around the property to say goodbye to the old place. We did have some wonderful memories there. They weren't all horrific. So, bags packed, house cleansed, I went to have my final night's sleep in the house. Or so I foolishly thought. Because at 2 a.m. Not just my bedroom door, but everywhere I'd placed in my journal, the knocks were emanating from. I grabbed my bags and I ran out of that house at 2 a.m., down to my car, and I drove to my mother's non-stop. My father returned later that week to hand over the keys, and I never saw that place again. Thank God. Looking back, my only thought or theory is that maybe those rumbling sounds were DuPont burying himself into the chateau brick. Maybe that's why Father Bernard assumed he'd gone, when in reality, he'd just chosen to hide. Thankfully, this is all in my past. The house is now a B&B and has had extensive renovations. Though before sending this, I searched TripAdvisor reviews. There were several reports of hearing knocking, seeing a man, even someone being pushed down the stairs. Perhaps there are just too many people for him to fully focus on, because I imagine if he had his sights on just one person, my meddling with the priest may have made him stronger. Perhaps, once again, deadly. Best, Lucia. Well, Lucia, thank you so much for being this season's penultimate episode, and what an episode. Each and every part of that I could visualize so well, and your theory about Mr. DuPont hiding himself in the stone of the original chateau brings a whole new meaning to the term stone tape theory. For any listeners wondering, no, I did not receive any other information from Lucia regarding the whereabouts of this location. I have replied to Lucia, asking if she'd be willing to share, solely with myself, some details that could maybe be investigated. So I will keep you abreast of any information regarding that. But in the meantime, a huge thank you to Lucia for sending in such a thought-provoking email. Now don't forget, if you have your own experience that you'd like sharing for season 21, just follow the links in the show notes or go direct to the website thedarkparanormal.com and click Submit My Experience. But from a dark paranormal point of view, the next time I'll speak to you will be for the finale. And I won't say you don't want to miss it, but I will say I cannot wait to share it with you all. And until next time, stay safe, take care, and remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always leave some of your belief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand. through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.